inspirational speaker, author, motivator, empowerer. What would you consider yourself as, and what is your spiel?
Oh, I'm Taz. My spiel, you know, it depends on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to a business crowd, because I do a lot in the corporate world now, and then it's all about confidence, empowerment, and then making sure your personal brand is where it needs to be, and then into visibility. But those who know me from more of my spiritual work, the two kind of interlink, and it's the same work, but for a different audience. Of course, I'm also big into spiritual work, shamanism, meditation, working with animal spirits. But all of that comes back to the essence of who we are, to the truth of who we are. It's just that some in the business crowd aren't quite ready to accept that, you know, visibility and personal brand absolutely needs to be linked to the spirit and the core of the truth of who we are. All the same thing, different language.
Yeah, I suppose it is, isn't it? It's who your audience is and what the words that they need to hear, and how you empower and inspire those to make that decision. And once perhaps a little bit down the line, they'll have that connection and go, these things are interlinked, I can connect them, and I feel great and wonderful about myself. So I can see why.
It's amazing how many people I meet through the corporate world and then look me up and say, hey, tell me about this. Tell me about the big one. Tell me about your empowerment program. And of course, that is based around shamanism. And then it brings in a few crazy things like fire walking and stuff to really challenge us. But it's all shamanism and animism based. So a crazy amount of people meet me in the business world and then really want to peel the mask away, and I think that's amazing.
Well, that's really good, because I guess there's something they can both learn from me, both personally and professionally, and obviously for the workforce or whatever is that they want to empower. So there's a powerful crossover between those. So I think I was wondering about where we're going to start this conversation. I was going to say perhaps the first time I met you was like 2012, 2013. We met at a festival, and you were talking mainly about the shamanic journey. And so that was that way that led to you at that point? And now you've become Taz the Brand since? Or were you Taz the Brand before that? How did that work?
A bit of both. So I was absolutely corporate girl for a lot of years, right at the top of the tree in corporate publishing. UK director of what at the time was one of the biggest multinational publishing companies. And it was all kind of great for the ego, great looking at bonus checks, you know, what are they when self-employed, great going on these amazing holidays. But I was absolutely dying on the inside out. I could do that job standing upside down with the hands tied behind my back and blindfolded, but it wasn't filling me up. So Taz was always there, but Taz got absolutely buried beneath kind of pinstripes and starch and spreadsheets and corporate spiel. And it took, I mean, it's a long, long story, but it took what I can now recognise as a breakdown for me to be able to break through all of that. So yeah, breakdown literally led to breakthrough. And I recognised that what really filled me up was using the horrid term. So many people say gift. I don't think it is a gift. I think we've all got a kind of psychic, spiritual, intuitive ability. It's just that we are conditioned to switch it off. Okay. I've had this knowing and this ability to see and sense things that other people didn't seem to be able to from a young age. And I recognized more and more that part of me being able to help people and to get to the core of what they needed was being able to intuit and sense. And so that's what I recognized started to fill me up. So therein started this kind of massive learning curve. So I was already into spirituality. I'd already started training in shamanism. But by the time I leapt out of corporate, I'd spent a decade learning with shamans and medicine people. I'd trained up to Reiki master, I'd dabbled a bit in crystals, done some mediumistic training, but I'd also trained in neurolinguistic programming and coaching and enterprise mentoring and extreme empowerment, trained with the same guys that trained Tony Robbins to do the firewalking and all that stuff. But when I first left corporate, I felt so kind of burned by corporate life that for a while, I was doing everything under brand Firechild Shamanism. And that was great. I was also working with my wife, Asher, and we'd rebranded her business into Turquoise Tiger. So I was kind of still keeping a finger in with marketing and PR and stuff. And it was through the speaking gigs and training I was doing with corporate that people kept coming to me and saying, you mentioned earlier something about shamanism? What is it? I'd really like to hear more about that. Or I'd teach people some of the kind of tribal personal development teachings, which knocks spots on any of the left brain stuff we learn today. And people would start saying, would you come in and do this for my team? And so it was probably only about I'm in year three now, so I'm only in year three of brand Taz being born. Sidechild Shamanism is still there. Turquoise Tiger, my wife's business, is still there. But the reason I went all out in personal brand under brand Taz was because it forced me to be visible. It stopped me from hiding behind a pretty logo. And if I'm all about telling people to get in touch with the truth of who they are, and makes that's sense, what yeah. makes business tick, and that's what brings people in, because people are sick of being given plastic and being sold at. People want to know
it's true.
Who they're investing their time and money with.
It's true when you say when you talk about, like, say, people putting their time, their money, their effort and their passion into it. It's very, very easy to create a flashy website or some pictures that are really good, and you realize actually it's just fluff. There's no personality.
Yeah, it's all smoke and mirrors, as somebody once said to me about a brand. You know,
yeah,
just,
there's no substance.
Yeah.
And you see
so that's
that.
Why I went under Taz, because then I couldn't hide behind a logo again.
Yeah, that's really powerful just in itself. Is for someone, are you in a business to learn that? It actually, sometimes that's a what do you want? Taking the blinkers off. That's a really powerful message. So.
Yeah.
So man, So when I look at your Facebook wall, yeah, I think your Facebook wall has more comments from your wife than you.
Oh shit, my wife.
That you know that keeps my life entertained. That doesn't.
Mine too, and you know she walks into a room now, and it's even superseded her business brand. People are like, oh my god, the shit my wife says live, and you know that came out of. She's a bit of a footy fan, and I'm not. I'm a bit of a football widow when that all starts. And it came out a few years back. I think it was the World Cup was on. And she really, you know, it's a bit like Hong Kong Fui when the mild-mannered janitor disappears and this swashbuckling guy comes up. She turns into football thug. And so I sat next to her during this match and I just started live tweeting everything that she was saying and all these swear words and rampant abuse that she was flying and all these football cliches. And it went from there and it morphed from there. And every time she says something dappy, we're like, oh, shit, my wife says. In fact, she will often come to me and say, I did the shit my wife says, you need to post it. Which is hilarious, because so many people who don't know us and don't know the dynamics see that and say to me things like, it's really disrespectful, I don't like what you say about your wife. Whoa, she's often feeding them in. You don't get it, missing the point. Power of social, eh?
You know, it's true about the power of social. The social, I guess it imposes everyone to have an opinion about absolutely everything. And I think social media is a really powerful platform for getting individual messages out there. Sometimes everyone's opinion is in the way.
I think social media is a really powerful platform, but where it concerns me, if we're using it for good and we're getting powerful, inspirational, motivational, educational, just entertaining messages out, that's amazing. But where it concerns me is I absolutely believe that we in the West, she says, making quote marks in the air, are massively drama addicted. And
yeah,
I think
you know,
social media, if we're not careful, really feeds that. You know, anyone who's listening to this or watching this and doesn't get what I mean about drama addiction, just spend a bit of time scrolling through the Facebook wall. Get out of your own do I need to reply to anything bubble for a moment and just watch until you get one of those posts from someone saying something along the lines of, if only some people would learn that I need this and to treat people better than blah. And they're clearly talking about an individual situation.
They are, yeah.
And then the comments go, they're those
are you okay?
Fishing posts, don't they? And then they follow them, are you okay? What's the matter? Inbox me, hon. Oh, I feel sick. And they get that drama hit. It gives them an endorphin release.
That's
but then
brain.
The trouble is, that starts to dip, and then they need to get a higher one and a higher one and a higher one until there's the
drama
the
is so extreme,
post
yeah.
Saying, I'm going to check out.
You know,
and then what?
That's true. You know, that's a very good point. I do see that very often with people. They'll post about, you know, I feel really bad. I'm having a really bad day. And they're clamoring for attention. And the attention comes. And then, like you said there, the next time they need that endorphin hit, I must do something more bold to get that attention.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, like if you've been conditioned by the soaps, shall we say, and conditioned by drama. And I like how you use the phrase of, you know, drama addiction. You want to raise the ante because you've got to make the story more appealing to people.
Absolutely.
So you've got to draw them in quicker because that's what you have to do as the writer. And then, you know, potentially you take it to a terrible level. And some people really, they don't just check out. They check out mentally. They have a breakdown. They get upset. They're not getting their endorphin. They're not getting enough likes. And, you know, it can really send, it makes them feel terrible inside. They're not getting the attention they want.
It does, which is right. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm high enough to show you my boobies. Flip your negatives is kind of one of my hashtags. I've got this real passion. This is super, super important to me to get people to think about when the proverbial hits the fan, instead of saying, woe is me, to step back and say, okay, this might not feel very fair. That this might feel hideous. But why has this happened for me, not to me? How can I flip it? What can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? How can I use this to help and inspire others instead of just sinking? Because, I mean, we've all got terrible stories from childhood, haven't we? We can you know, I could talk about the time when I was a kid and some of my mates locked me in our garden shed and I climbed out through the window and caught my face up falling down it all. You know, the time my dad died and my grandfather, all these things we go through, irrelevant of the scale of trauma according to your level of comparison, there's an element of so what? Okay, that happened. Can I continue to blame all of the misfortune I perceive in my life now on those things? Is it because of global warming? Is it because of Donald Trump? Is it because of the government? We've still got to take charge of our own futures, our own destinies. And instead of doing woe is me, we need to look at these challenges that have been given to us and find the gift in them, find the teaching in them, find the lesson in them. It's not that hard to do, but it feels hard when we've gone into that blinkered drama mindset.
Yeah, you know, right.
These things, they're to help us grow, aren't they?
They are, yeah, because you go through... People also have this misconception that people don't grow and people don't change. And there's sometimes we put very easily onto other people, well, you're never going to change. That person is a bad partner or a bad husband or they're a bad business person. Well, actually, they can also learn and develop as well. And so that coaching takes, you know, sometimes a third party needs to intervene in that and actually make them aware of how bad they were or how upset they were. And then suddenly they actually can personally transform out of that situation. People can be depressed. People do go through powerful psychological damage. And, you know, sometimes it just takes someone to go, hey, how you doing, man? And just to lift you back up. And you're never aware of how low you were until actually it slaps you in the face.
Absolutely. Do you know, there was something I saw on social only yesterday, and this worried me a little bit as well. I think we're starting to see a backlash, or at least a ripple effect, a blowback from all this positive rah, rah, rah stuff. And yes, I'm big on talking about positivity, but I don't believe that anybody should be trying to be happy 24/7. We're not robots.
No.
The point of all these positive mental attitude tools that we can access now, it's not about being happy 24/7. It's about being able to recognize when we're about to dip, and having the tools to pull ourselves out of it more quickly so we don't stay there for as long. But I saw something yesterday. Somebody had written a blog, and somebody in one of my groups had reposted it, who's going through a bit of a tough time at the minute, or at least I perceive they are from the stuff they're putting on social.
Okay.
And it was all about, but what if we don't want to improve our lives? What if we just want to be mediocre? And what if, you know, I feel bad. All these posts about positivity are making me feel worthless because I just want a mediocre life. And I think that's missing the point. If what you really want is a life that you perceive to be mediocre, then create that. That's just about levels of happiness, isn't it? We don't all want, you know, the super jet and the yacht. Some of us just want to be able to pay the bills, give our kids, you know, new shoes and get on with life. And that's okay. But it's not about reaching for super levels. It's about reaching for, to quote back Brad Burton, your level. What is it you want? That is your awesome. If you perceive what you want is mediocre, you need to switch your life, your mindset, because mediocre to you, it's going to be bloody awesome. If that's what you want, you've got to live life by your rules and what you want your life to be and where you want to be in 10 years' time, not what all these guru quote memes floating around the internet say you should want. It's about balance and... self-perception.
It is. You make an interesting point there about self-perception. That people's what they want and their ideal life actually is very, very different from each other. And we're not all talking about, say, Zig Ziglar levels of, you know, absolute, utter powerful, which is wonderful to hear that every so often. And
it's wonderful if you're Zig Ziglar.
Of course it is. But he's obviously a powerful driver of the motivational force from like the 60s and 70s, and still continues to do so today. His message is really powerful and inspiring. But like you said, not everyone really wants to achieve that a yacht. So not everyone really wants to own their own house. People are very content just to like pay the bills and just like, this is what I want. And sometimes I do wonder with some people, are they incapable of achieving that? But then you look at them and go, actually, you know, they are probably living the life of that they want perfectly. And why should I want to lift them any higher? Because actually they are exactly where they want to be. Perhaps we shouldn't always want to lift them because that's where they want to be in life. But sometimes they do need a bit of a nudge sometimes.
That's the trap, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think Why we then want to lift those people is because a lot of them, I'm using a sweeping generalization here, but a lot of them are in that drama addiction phase.
Yes.
And so they churn out lots of negative comments about their life on social media. So then people try and pick them up, and then they get pissed off that people are trying to turn them into something they don't want to be. If you want mediocre, and again, that could be your awesome. It doesn't matter where it's wherever you are on the scale. If that's what you want, then get some peace with that and stop moaning about it. Because if you keep complaining about it, of course people are going to want to try and lift you, because you're putting out an impression that you're not happy with your lot. If you're happy with your lot, quit complaining and stop looking for lifts through dramatic Facebook posts. Either, as my very crude friend from Bermuda would say, shit or get off the pot.
No, I get that, I really do. So, obviously you released a book a few years ago, didn't you? So, I went to Amazon, became an Amazon bestseller. I saw how popular it was going. So how did that transform your life? I mean, because obviously that must have got you a lot of publicity, I'm assuming, because I saw you jet setting here, there and everywhere.
Yeah, well, the first one to come out was Whispers from the Earth. And that came about because, again, through my shamanic work, I love this concept of storytelling. You know how a lot of people in indigenous and tribal communities have these amazing teaching stories? We'll have all heard some of them. And it used to be called shooting people with a story. So the kind of wise man in the village or the wise woman could tell an entire tribe the same story, but it was loaded with so many teachings that different people listening would get the teachings they needed. And they could all be very different. And that was called shooting people with a story. But I was sitting there in a conference one day, and we were talking, it was a shamanic gathering, and we were talking about storytelling. And I started to wonder, well, where are ours? Where are the stories from our past? Because they've all been eroded, and I could get very kind of gung-ho political here and start talking about the coming of the Romans and the church and how much of our spiritual past was just wiped out. But one of the guides that I work with kind of whispered into my subconscious and said, well, we're here, the stories are here, you've just got to quest for them. So I started questing for these stories, and I thought I might get a few snippets even there, here and there. And I was coming out of these meditations and journeys with these beautiful fully formed stories and writing them down. And then I tasked a couple of my shamanic students and said, see if this works for you too. And they were bringing them back, and that's where Whispers came from. And it was wonderful because that book was never going to be my first book. My first book was always going to be what turned into.
Okay. I think we might have lost connection there. Let's just see if we can reconnect to Taz there. Let's just.
Now and go and listen. I was sitting doing something really. And then to a publisher, and I'm imagining it. Shut up. I'm trying to do accounts or something I didn't want to do. And it kept dropping in. And eventually I down-tooled and said, okay, if this is real, which publisher? And the voice said immediately, Moon Books. I'm like, don't be ridiculous. I've never heard of Moon Books. So I Googled, oh, there is a Moon Books. And I took three or four of the stories that I'd typed out, whacked them over on a Word document, and within an hour or so, they'd come back saying, we're really interested. Will you submit a formal proposal? And I did that. And within a couple of weeks, I'd got a publishing offer. Like, whoa, it really can be that easy. So that was amazing. And I got to go and speak all over the place with that. I haven't checked recently, but the last time I checked was about 3 or 4 months back. And it was still in the Amazon bestseller list in its category. And then, of course, when Unleash came, which is, again, same stuff, but different language. It's more kind of coaching in a cover. There's challenges about it. It covers everything from mindset through to manifestation, through to attracting the money and people you need into your life, through to exactly what we were talking about before. What is it that you want? Who do you want to be? How do you make that happen? How do you overcome challenges? Semi-autobiographical, I talk about, you know, breaking my back and those suicidal blips I went through. They are blips in retrospect. And that's still going strong too. That sold out 4 times in the first week. And now I'm in a position where we're recording this in September.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to have a follow-up to Whispers written for Moon Books and a follow-up to Unleash written for Motivational Press by the end of this year.
Is that a contractual obligation, or is that something you're...
It is, but they're both quite good. They're I've just spoken to Moon and had to nudge it a little bit. Because the trouble is that when I go into the kind of coaching mindset, and more of the stuff that ties into Unleash Your Autumn, and I'm speaking to businesses and corporates, it kind of takes me out of that zone where I need to just be still and channel stories for the follow-up to Whispers from the Earth.
I get you, yeah.
And I've been so on the go with that form since I released Unleash that I just haven't had time to get outside and just, you know, yes, sit with a tree and commune with nature, man.
I can actually really connect with that quite well because I've been writing a book now for like must be 3.5 years, and it's story's finished, as it were. But I'm padding it out, adding extra detail, which is required. You know, yeah. And when you get extra learning and you go, actually, that would fit that perfectly, that would explain that character a bit better, and you obviously add a little bit more to it. And you thought, well, it's never quite in a finished condition, so let me add a bit more to it. And I'm just like, because I've been doing so many other things, like with work, with management, my challenges with my daughter, and life in general, I sometimes don't get the time to go and put those efforts in because they're two different worlds. Yeah. I need a little bit of space. And I was talking to Peter Laws, who's an Amazon bestseller as well, it's like last week, and he's the he's one of the columnists for Footy and Times. And he's like, dude, just what you need to do is just check out for a bit. What he says he does is he books a bed and breakfast for a weekend, or he goes to his local monastery and sits there and plans his, like, right, I'm going to do 8 hours here, I'm going to have 4 hours where I'm just going to write and do the research that is needed, not check social media. And then get a coffee, and organize it like a day at work. You know, I'll do this, have a break, and I'll write for that time. He says that, and when he started doing that, that changed his mindset into when he was in writing mode, and when he was in, you know, in his other writing mode,
living mode. Absolutely. In fact, I took my first proper day out for months yesterday. I've been stupidly busy and filling in all the gaps of. And I need now to carve in some downtime, or I'll be starting to head towards that, you know, kind of semi-burnout phase. And I left the phone at home. I headed off to the coast with Asher. And it was amazing to just be offline. Sometimes when you're offline, you're never more connected. And I think we all need to remember that. It's really, really important to, hustle and grind and all that stuff the corporate world tells us to do. But you can't hustle and grind anywhere near as effectively if you haven't stopped and just gone and, you know, walk barefoot on the grass, go and sit with a tree, just go and throw all your troubles out to the sea, whatever you need to do, but just switch off, get out in nature, and the connection there is stronger than any Wi-Fi link you'll ever find. And we forget that sometimes.
Yeah, we really do. And, you know, walking barefoot on the grass is just it's a really powerful feeling, actually. And someone said there's a scientific reason for this, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but he described it as being, is that because we have a charge through our body, electrical charge, when we walk on grass, it appears to earth us. Now, I don't know whether he was meaning it in the sense of, for a Gaia, very spiritual, fluffy like, or whether he's actually talking about being earthed electrically. But actually, the way that he said it was quite like, no, I think I get that. I think I feel that vibe.
It does make sense. Yeah. Really does.
It's also interesting when someone asks, how are you? I say, for instance, yesterday, wonderful friend of mine, she's doing really well in horse riding. She says to me, how are you? And I was like, I had no idea actually how to respond. And are we talking physically? We're talking mentally, spiritually, financially, economically? And we're talking about my connection to the social sphere? So I actually wrote that. And then I put, you know, and then she replied with, I don't understand what you mean. And I was like, oh my God.
But doesn't that show, you know, I talk about this drama addiction thing. I also think that we've got this massive massive issue with being head-heart disconnected. We've all become heads dragging around bodies. And we forget that even if you look up, you know, embraining, science is catching up now. We have neurological processes in the heart and in the gut, not just in the head. So why aren't we using all of them? But that, from your friend, is an indication for me of how disconnected we've been. We don't stop to think about even the words we're using anymore. You know, we say that all the time, don't we? It's almost become a greeting. How are you?
And yeah, all right, thanks. Really, yeah,
stuff if somebody actually tells us how they are. But you've asked me. But I wanted you to just say okay and ask how I was, and I'd say okay. And then we'd talk about what's going on at work and have a coffee talking about nothing that's anything other than surface level.
Yeah,
and then go back into our surface level lives.
Yeah, nothing of any relevance. And sometimes that's why I was like, well, okay, so what do I need to bring out a relevant conversation here other than, like you said, how are you? Yeah, not bad, thanks. Yeah, are you okay? Yeah, fine. All right. and you walk past each other, and that's jobs are good. But sometimes you actually go, I actually like this person. I would like to draw out a bit of a conversation with this person. And like, yeah, they are not, either they are not capable to understand the question sometimes, or they don't understand the drama of what they've created with the simple words of how are you. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, it throws us, doesn't it? It takes us off script. Oh, off script, off script, off script. Oh, no. It's like confusing a salesperson. Yeah. Just caught the wire with my foot.
I'd say,
yeah, we're back straight again then.
That's all good. I'm good.
Snuff now.
Yeah, because I think there's like, there's this whole like double whammy of going, what's going on in the world? The news is in upheaval about all the crazy stuff that's happening in the world. We're all struggling perhaps with financial things and life and all the things that's been thrown our way. And sometimes we actually really need someone to really ask, how are you? Just for us, yeah, to go, you know what? Let me tell you.
Yeah. It's like, but are you really okay? Oh, what you really want to know? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a different feeling, there's a different meaning behind that, isn't there? Yeah. And I think for many people, they find it very hard just to say what that even is. How do you express off your chest what it really is? You can go to a counsellor as well. You can go to these people.
Of course you can, but a lot of us are afraid of going there. Again, this head-heart disconnect. Well, no, I can't dip down there because then if I feel something, then emotions might come out. And I've been holding those for so long, I don't know when I'd stop and I wouldn't be able to work. And we're getting almost into a fear culture when it comes to tapping into the reality of our emotions. We keep them boxed off. And it's no wonder so many of us now are having kind of later life breakdowns, if you like, because the second we slow down and this doesn't have to kick in all the time, then those lids are going to start to be peeled off all the boxes and it's all going to flood in. It's much healthier to actually deal with stuff as we're going along rather than storing all the shit up for retirement. It really is.
I was actually just going to come in there with regards to medication, how more people now are than ever are antidepressants and SSRIs than ever before. And, you know, I was offered them myself by my doctor and I was like, well, no, because my body is telling me there's a problem, you know. I'm feeling this way because there's actually something happening. And you hear it from people who they take painkillers for even a simple ailment. There's a certain point where the painkillers no longer work because your body is shouting, look, you need to deal with this because there's a problem underneath. There's an underlying issue. Stop covering it up with some painkillers. Actually, let's find out what the undercurrent is. And we really never want to touch that anymore. We'll very simply just dumb our emotions down where we can just feel comfortable with how we are, what's going on with us.
Just keep me going, just keep me going, just keep me going. I'll deal with that later, just keep me going.
Yeah.
Do you know, when I was going through my breakdown, I did end up going on to antidepressants, and I remember talking to the medicine man I was working at the time, Chris Littleshire from Northern Drum, and I was really concerned about taking some antidepressants because I was worried that they might interfere with, you know, the other worlds, with my perception, with the dream world. And Chris said to me, just make a plan, just decide how long you want to be on them for. But really, use them as a platform. Don't use them as a crutch. Just use them as a platform to enable you to step up to a point where you are able to then deal with what's going on underneath. And that for me was really useful. And I didn't stay on them for too long. But I think that's the balance. Sometimes when we really do have that kind of knotted ball of wool in our heads and we can't find the ends of the string, we can't untangle it, some antidepressants or some kind of chemical intervention, if you like, can help. But we need to recognise that we're using that to get to a point to enable us to deal with the shit, not just use them as a crutch forevermore. And I think that's really important. But I also think that, you know, before we even get to the antidepressants, when did a doctor last say drink more of that, for instance? You know, Ash and I, she's going through menopause at the moment, bless her. It's fun in our house. And she's been blogging about it.
Double jeopardy.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep saying, you wait, you've got it all to come. But a year or so back, where we found ourselves just bickering at each other a bit too much, and it was going beyond that kind of, oh, ho, ho, you silly old crow. It was going beyond the kind of jokey banter and into, oh, that hurt a little bit. And we both took time out and said, you know what? Next time we feel the other one is getting a little bit niggly, the other one of us needs to say, have a drink of water. And we agreed to do it. And we did that for a few months. Every time we could feel that one of us was getting just a little bit antsy, we'd say, have you had a drink of water today? And every time we'd go and have a drink. And our moods started to change. And, you know, I wonder how many of the people, I've actually started to try and do a bit of research on this. I think it's really important. How many people who are on antidepressants are actually chronically dehydrated?
That's interesting.
Because we drink we drink tea and coffee, don't we? Because which are diuretics. It's not the same as having water. Or how many people in day-to-day workland, where, you know, they're out of house into an office and then back into a building again, actually have really low levels of vitamin D. These are modern day illnesses, dehydration and low vitamin D. Of course, they can impact so many things, including our mood. And I reckon there'll be a direct correlation with the amount of people who are dehydrated and have low levels of vitamin D with the amount of people who are now on antidepressants. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're certainly on the right track with that. People don't drink enough water. I mean, in fact, even I don't drink enough water. I choose to have water on a regular basis, but I don't feel I ever have enough. You hear, like, government recommendations, you should drink 8 pints a day, and I'm going, when do I have time to drink 8 pints a day? I've got to work all the time. I've got to come home. I've got things to do.
But we recognise it at the end of life, don't we? I don't know if anyone here has had an elderly relative or a loved one in a care home, but certainly when Ash's mum was, she's not with us anymore, but when she was in a care home till the end of her life, we always knew if we walked in and she was a bit agitated, we knew she hadn't had enough to drink. Her mobility wasn't very good by then, and you know, there'd be a jug of water, but it was over there and she wouldn't be able to reach it, and she wouldn't be able to hold the drink, you know, to lift the cup. And so we'd sit, and for the first half an hour or so we'd be like, drink some of this, mum, drink some of this, mum, and her mood would regulate. And this is what doesn't get me. We know that if a kid is getting agitated, if we're not reaching for the Calpol, we think they haven't had enough to drink or they're tired. And if somebody who is elderly or ill is agitated or there's something not quite right with their mood, we suspect they're tired or they haven't had enough to drink.
Yeah.
But then everybody in the middle of those two brackets, we go, oh, they need antidepressants. Why do we only recognise that, you know, being tired and dehydrated is only an issue at the beginning of life and at the end of life? And if it happens in the prime of life, we just say, give them some chemicals.
Powerful message. It really is. So I mean, this is like kind of like the process of like a reinvention for people, isn't it? You know, you have to look at yourself slightly differently and look at everyone else around you differently. And I liked what you were saying about how you recognise that if you were getting bitey with your partner, sometimes it's not enough to say you're shouting too much. It's actually just have some water, just and then come back to me in a minute. And that's a really something people can take away from this. And I think if a conversation point, just stop getting ratty. Have some water. See you in 5 minutes.
The key to that is it needs both parties to be open to just saying, okay, I'll have a drink of water.
That's right. Otherwise, it's like, you cheeky man, what the hell? I don't know water.
Don't tell them to drink water if they're standing by the knife block. You know, just shout from the other room.
it's a bit like saying, just calm down, man.
Yeah. It's the last thing. Drop in via Alexa from another room in the house. Yeah.
So what have you got coming up then? What's your plan then for the future? How's things working in World of Tales?
Wow. Well, there's those two books to write, for starters. I'm doing a lot more with speaking now. I've just run a 2-day speaking retreat called The Heart of Speaking, which was for people who wanted to learn to become better public motivational speakers. And I think where it was different is that it was all about using your story to inform everything we were talking about earlier with, you know, what's happened in your life and how can that inform people? How can it inform you? How can it educate? How can it inspire? I think there are so many people now telling, particularly those in businesses, just tell your story, tell your story, tell your story. And there's confusion happening, which is resulting in lots of people just coming out with these long biographical rambles. You know, I don't care where you were born unless it was really, really somewhere different. So when people say tell your story, it's not about saying, well, I was born here and then I did this and then I went to school. It's about looking at your timeline and looking at the things that have happened and going, okay, how can I flip the negatives for me? And then how can I use that incident to help other people? That's the essence of storytelling, and at least in terms of being useful with your message. When you want to tell your story, don't give your biography. Look at the challenges in your life, how you've been able to overcome them, and use those to help other people. So I'm really passionate about that. What else have I got? I've got a couple of overseas speaking gigs coming up. That's quite important. That's quite exciting. We're just starting to plan for the big one 2019 that will start in September 2019, so that's my kind of spiritual empowerment program.
Did you say the one was overseas?
No, I've got a couple of speaking gigs overseas. Well, okay, I did have a couple overseas. In November, I was due to have Miami and Milan in the same month. I was like, oh my God, that's a lot to cram in. But last night, I was told that Miami's been postponed to 2019, so just Milan in November now. I can breathe.
That's probably a bit more. I was going to say, that's probably a bit of a I don't have to worry about animals now.
Yeah, take that breath off. Oh, 2019 is much easier to plan.
What is it? That's at forefront, isn't it? It's for planning, isn't it? You can see, okay, I can now see the scope of what I need to achieve, and I'll have it done. So that Miami gig will now be like a spectacular, as opposed to being really good.
Yeah, absolutely, because I'll have time to just sit and chill. And it was for a big book launch event, and I contributed a chapter to one of the books, so that'd be lovely. What else? I've got towards the end of the year, I always run an Unleash Your Awesome for the year ahead. So Unleash Your Awesome for 2019. I haven't plugged them in yet, but they'll likely be happening around December, maybe some in January. And that's bringing people who want to really look at what they want the next year to be, not business planning, but life planning. What do you want to create? How do you want to be feeling? What do you want to manifest into your life? So they'll be happening. I always, towards the end of the year as well, go really into shamanic, and I run a workshop called Life, Death and Beyond, which is all about the way shamanic cultures look at what happens when we die, how we prepare for that, how we almost make friends with death, and what the beliefs are in terms of what happens to the spirit after we die before it gets recycled and pops back in.
Just hovering on that point just for a second there. Yeah. It's like we find ourselves at this time of year, obviously celebrating Halloween and Samhain and all those different various names and connotations, whether it be the Day of the Dead in Mexico and so on.
Yeah.
And there is people at this time of year right now recognize that, certainly our ancients did, as that there's a lot of people who aren't going to make it through the winter. And I think it's a really powerful message at this time of year. It's like, well, now you're going into celebration, so you will celebrate the lives with those people who are our ancestors who didn't make it previously, and you can celebrate your time in life with the people who are around you, but those potentially might not make it. And I think that's a really powerful story in itself. And when I say that to people, they're like, I never thought of it like that. I just thought it was a party. Well, it is a party. It's a party for those who have...
Of course it is.
The reason you've got to this point in life, in evolution, in society, is because your ancestors have died and have lived for you to be here right now from the very beginning of time. And you look at that and their eyes just start to widen and they're like, oh, I never thought of it like that before.
And the other real head melt with that I like to drop in from time to time, is we think back to those ancestors, the blood ancestors, if we like, because again, shamanically we believe there we have two sets of ancestors. We have our blood ancestors and we have our spirit ancestors. But if we just think back to those blood ancestors that have really inspired us, that we've learned from, maybe it's a grandparent, maybe they fought in one of the wars, maybe they just really were connected with nature in a way that we're not. And think about the lives we're creating, because we are the ancestors yet to come. Yeah. We don't think about that. We are creating, we are going to be those ancestors. How do we want our future generations to look back and think of us? How do we want to inspire the other ancestors yet to come, you know, our kids, our grandkids, our great-grandkids, for those of us who don't, I don't have kids, but, you know, the people around us with kids, what do we want to do there? And I think the other thing that we neglect at this time of year, and it's such a beautiful time, I mean, I'm looking out of the window now, there are trees out here, and the leaves are starting to, you know, turn golden and brown. This time of year is such a stark and beautiful reminder of the cycles of life and death, because it's happening all around us. We don't look at a tree at winter when the leaves start to fall and go, oh God, it's dying. We just see it as a transitionary phase, because that from that comes new growth. You know, from the leaves that fall, they mulch into the ground, they create new growth there. And yet when we die, too many of us see it as being absolutely final. It's regrowth, it's all cycles. And the other thing at this time of year, particularly when we start talking about the C word, not my favorite C word, the other one with more syllables, we talk about the importance of family and togetherness and all those, you know, the John Lewis advert will pop up and it'll all be about celebrating with loved ones. And we don't stop to think that there's going to be a lot of people out there who are being bombarded with messages about the importance of being with your loved ones and your family who don't have loved ones and family.
You're right. Yeah.
So we need to remember that too, that while we're reveling in the taken for granted blood family and friends around us, there are people out there who are being bombarded with that message and they have no one to get a hug from.
No.
So we need to just tread carefully, I think.
No, that's
gently.
That's the right way to put it, isn't it? Because sometimes, and also to recognize those people exist in itself is a really powerful message for one's individual self. But when you see those people and you see how sad they are, sometimes there's this really powerful story that a lot of doctors and nurses talk about, particularly in the midwifery section, where, you know, children who don't, when they're born, they don't have parents around, they may have died, the child actually, because it hasn't been held, won't survive. And it's true that the human body needs touch. It needs a connection to other people to feel strong again. And, you know,
surely you can just give it antidepressants, can't you?
Oh, well, we could do. Just give it a few chemicals, and we could trick the body into thinking it's okay, but actually deep down, it's far from that. Man.
Trickster energy is a powerful energy to work with, but when we're tricking ourselves into believing that we don't need to do the work on ourselves, that's not clever even remotely. That's a one-way ticket to off the planet, and we need to go deeper. We need to stop being trapped in this mindset, this treadmill mindset, thinking, I just need to get through tomorrow. I've got a busy week. I just need to get through. I just need to get through. I just need to get through. When are you going to stop? When are you not going to not just need to get through? When are you going to not just need the doctor to give you a sticking plaster? Because sooner or later, that plaster's not going to be able to hold all the dis-ease. Deal with it now. Take time out now. And if you need, that's not to be anti-GP. I believe that it's not either or, it's not alternative medicines, it's complementary. And part of that complementary medicine is taking care of yourself on a spirit, energy and heart-based level. Don't just keep putting the sticking plaster on, because sooner or later that'll burst.
You know, I think that's a really powerful story to leave us with today. So I know you obviously got the time coming ahead. So look, leave us your social media details. Tell us about where we can find your information, what it is that you talk about, and your social media stuff. You know, where can people find what you, Taz, are all about?
I'll make it really easy for you. You can find me on my website at tazthornton.com, and then whichever social media platform you're on, if you search for Taz Thornton, you'll find me. Don't bother on Snapchat, because I'm on there, but I don't understand it. I think I'm too old. Everywhere else, just search Taz Thornton and I'm there.
Okay. That's really good. Thank you, Saz. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.
Hopefully catch up with you sometime soon.
Yeah, be good too. Take care.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Thank you very much for taking the time out to join me here today. I really do appreciate it. But if I could just ask one more thing of you, you could just press like, dislike, leave a comment, or press subscribe. You could do any or all of those things, but it allows me to know whether I'm producing the kind of content that you want to listen to. I do produce a variety of content, especially on YouTube and out into the world of social media. So please, if you would, thank you very much. I'm Christian Lander. Until next time.